Sure, other stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
Hi, my name is Rachel, and my telephone number is... I wanted to tell you that you're evil, horrible people. You're awful people. You represent horrible ideas. God hates you, and he wants to kill your children. You should all burn in hell. Bye.
Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio, get ready for the best morning show on radio. It's Sam in the Morning, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Monday. It's February 17th, following a, a beautiful Valentine's Day, at least on the West Coast. And I'm back and I'm joined by the beautiful Charlotte. Welcome to the show, Charlotte.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here.
Yes, thank you. And Charlotte was on last Monday and it turned out very well. We had a couple of people that were like relationship experts and stuff. Mm-hmm. And that was a fun show. And you know what was funny is that, we sat here with them and everything and I felt we never met before. And we were talking, and then when he said that he was the founder of Great Expectations, that video dating service in the 80s, I thought, I knew somebody who was like Great Expectations founder, and but I didn't remember ever meeting him, right? So I go on our website the other day, and I do a search, and sure enough, he was on the show, but on the phone. You know, he was a guest on the phone.
Oh, really? That's
and
cool.
Neither did he nor us remember that he was on the show.
That's funny. That's cool, though, that he'd been on before, and yeah.
Yeah, you know, but it was like about... I guess about similar things, you know, uh-huh. But I didn't know it was the same guy. So it turned out being the same guy. And so that was cool. You know, I mean, this couple have been married for 18 years, yeah. You know, it's like refreshing and everything. So, I mean, can you imagine being with one person for that long?
No. And especially around Valentine's Day, it was cool to, I mean, their website, I went on it and it's awesome. The yeah. things that they have on that.
Oh, Tuology, right?
Yeah.
Tuology.com, yeah. Right. So what did you see on there? I haven't had a chance to go on there.
I love how it's really, it's very striking. You go on there and you want to just explore.
Really?
And I liked how you can click on lists of things that you and your partner need to work on. And I was like, this is really cool. I think a lot of people wouldn't want to do that.
Right.
But I think it would really help a lot of relationships.
That's true.
People
yeah.
did do that.
I know. And, you know, I mean, sometimes we view relationships as like hard work and stuff, you know. But to me, it shouldn't be hard work, you know. I mean, you know, if you guys don't get along, you know, especially after a few years, just break it off, you know. You're not meant for each other. Yeah, exactly, you know. So this is cool. So, well, there's a lot to talk about, but just to sort of like bring us up to speed here, I asked you a few things about you on last week, but I don't even remember anything. You know, it's been a long time.
It's been a whole
but
week.
My memory is going, you know. It's that cannabis cup that I went to. But so you're originally from Sheffield, right?
Yeah.
I remember that.
That's impressive that you remember that, because not many people remember
Yeah,
Sheffield.
Well, I cheated because I listened to the show last night. So it's funny. And that's in the UK.
Yeah.
Right? About how far from London is it?
It's about 3-4 hours north. It's close to it's about an hour away from Manchester. I usually say I'm from Manchester because most people know that because of the soccer team.
Right, exactly. So, yeah. Manchester United.
Exactly.
I remember when I was a kid, you know, they used to have, what's his name, George Best or something? Wasn't he like the star of the team for many years?
Yeah, and then David
before
Beckham,
your time, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, David Beckham is more your generation. It's like, I know, with David Beckham, it's like, who cares if he can play soccer? Look how hot he is in his shorts, you know.
Yeah.
And his briefs. Yeah, doesn't he do a commercial on briefs and stuff?
Yeah, and he's starting a soccer team in Miami.
Oh, really?
Now. Yeah.
After he was here in L.A. for a while.
Yep, he's starting from scratch. They're building everything. I just saw an interview where they kind of have an idea of the name and the colors they're going to pick, but he's hand-picking every person that's going to be on the team.
Wow.
Yeah, really interesting.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Based in Miami.
But you know what? The thing is that, you know, if he... I mean, they brought him from England, paid him a lot of money to sort of like revive soccer in the United States. Obviously, even he couldn't do that, you know,
yeah.
Because this country is so like not into soccer, you know, and so into football that it's never going to happen. You know, soccer is never going to take off. I think we've given it enough time, decades, to sort of like sink into the society here, but it just won't, you know. I mean, even when David Beckham is here, do you ever go to a soccer game? Do you ever see one here?
No.
You know, nothing, you know.
But I feel like I'm totally American now. I love American football.
Right.
And it does help. I went to Florida State and they just won the BCS championship. So I am a little, I love football.
Yeah.
Still in the championship phase.
Oh, like, they won the championship?
Won. Yeah.
Really? Your
yeah.
school?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was in Pasadena.
Uh-huh. The Rose Bowl?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was cool. But football is just so much more entertaining. It's so much more fun to watch. There's a lot more action than soccer
right.
where... I mean, you're lucky like 3 goals are scored.
I know, you're very lucky right? if you score 3.
Exactly.
I know. So the whole game is like, but that's the point is, the rest of the world just loves soccer, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like an amazing thing where everybody else just loves it and they give their lives, they devote their lives to it, you know. I mean, that's how the fans are.
Yeah.
And because I grew up in Israel and it was the same thing, you know. So I know, but then when you come here in American football, first it seems like it's going too slow because it stops after every play, you know. Soccer just goes straight through.
Yeah.
And I don't know how the players do it, though, because they run so much and there's no break, you know, in soccer. You got to be like...
Exhausting.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I know. So you got to be in great shape, you know.
Yeah.
But in, well, obviously in football you have to be in great shape, too, but that's for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And... mainly so they don't crack your skeleton while you're out there on the field.
Yeah,
you know,
seriously,
all the protective gear and stuff they have on. I mean, you know, it's like a sport where you wear a helmet like you would on a motorcycle. You know, it's pretty unusual. But
no, and it's intense the way that some of those people are tackled. It's like, wow,
uh-huh.
like. Holy moly.
I know. But I think a lot of people are drawn to it because of this strategy and everything. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. it's like sort of like planning a battle each play, you know?
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool, I think. And yeah, so I like football too, although I haven't really been into it lately.
Mm-hmm.
Well, lately, in the past 15 years or so, I haven't really been into football. But I'm not such a sports person, you know? Although you are. You're a swimmer, right?
Yeah.
And do you still swim?
Not really.
No, even for fun or
no.
for exercise?
I don't really have enough time to
yeah.
take the time to go to the pool. Because if I go and work out, it's going to be like an hour, 2 hour.
Oh, really? You can't just go
pool.
There and,
no,
and do half
no,
an hour, 20 minutes.
No. So and then having to get ready after.
Uh-huh.
So it's like a 4 hour process all in all.
Right. That's true.
So.
Yeah. So you started swimming back home in the UK, right?
Mm-hmm.
And were you in championships there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
really?
I competed for UK.
Uh-huh.
I went to European Juniors. I was a national champion multiple times.
Right. Oh, so you represented the country too?
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
Wow,
yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And would it be just you or a team of swimmers?
No, it's a team.
A team.
Yeah. And
right.
I just went for a specific event.
Okay.
I swam the backstroke.
Uh-huh.
And then I did the 2004-2008 Olympic trials. And at 2008, I got recruited to go to Florida State.
Uh-huh.
And as soon as I knew it was going to be an outdoor pool in the beautiful warm weather, I said, yes, you've got
really?
Me. Sign the paperwork.
So you gave up on the Olympics because of that?
Well, no, it was... Yeah. No, I was just at the trials.
Oh, okay. So
I made the finals, but I got recruited. That was where I got recruited.
Okay.
To go to Florida State. And then I went to Florida State.
Oh, I see. So you were recruited by the university.
Yeah,
okay, gotcha.
Yeah, by the university. Gotcha. The head coach was British.
Uh-huh.
So he was back with one of his swimmers. It was a British guy that was swimming in Florida State.
Uh-huh.
And so he was in England for Olympic trials, recruited me there. So I went over.
Wow. Yeah. How do you get discovered in swimming? That's interesting. Huh? I mean, do coaches like him go around the world and look for people?
Yeah, pretty much. And the fact that he was from England, he had a lot of knowledge about British swimmers. And he wanted somebody that I could do a lot of different things. I was recruited for backstroke, but I ended up swimming distance freestyle
for
Florida State.
Wow.
Because that's the area that they needed somebody in.
Right. And how far is the distance when you swim?
The mile is, it's 1,650 yards.
Wow.
That's
a lot.
66
how do you
laps.
Do this? Oh, my God.
Took 16 minutes.
Yeah. Wow. I don't know how you can do that.
The racing wasn't, it was the practice to get to do that. I mean,
and you're in great tip-top shape, right?
I was.
Right. I mean, I meant
when I swam,
in order
yeah.
to swim,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So you pretty much had to devote your life to it, right?
Completely.
I mean, because you have to practice a lot and train and
yeah.
so forth. So did you have any time for the studies too?
Yeah.
Doing all this?
That was one thing I liked about America. In England, sports and school is kind of separate. If I'd have stayed swimming in England, I probably wouldn't have gone to university.
Really?
Because I would have wanted to just put everything into swimming. Whereas in America, the schooling system's set up, because you swim for the school, they want to help you. Like
right.
if you have to take a week off class because you go into a competition, the teachers know that you're swimming for the school, so
okay,
they
so they
accommodate
you.
And yeah, and we cool. had tutors that gave us tutoring sessions.
Oh, nice.
So yeah.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm. So I got to get my degree as well.
Yeah, cool.
So it's perfect.
What did you get it in?
Editing, writing, and media.
Really?
It's the journalism equivalent at Florida State, but they don't have journalism.
Okay.
So
that's cool. Mm-hmm. So you've always been interested in media and stuff?
Yeah.
Really?
I didn't really know that I wanted to do kind of on-camera stuff until I interned at a TV station.
Uh-huh.
That was right before my senior year.
Mm-hmm.
But I always knew that I wanted to do something in this.
Right.
I like to write, so.
Do you really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
Do you have like a blog and stuff?
Yeah,
really?
I do.
I know. The internet is great. You know, now everybody can express themselves. You
right?
know? Yeah.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And now you're on radio too, so you're taking the field by storm.
I
you know?
Am.
Yeah. So in a couple of minutes, we're going to have a guest calling in. Her name is Toni Rae, and she wrote a book, and we're going to talk about romance and stuff, since this was just Valentine's Day. And did you do anything on Valentine's Day at all?
I didn't work. The thought of waitressing on Valentine's Day sounded awful to me.
Yeah.
So I didn't work. I went to dinner. It was nice.
Nice.
In Santa Monica. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, here's our guest calling. So let's go ahead and take the call. And good morning. You're on the air. Is this our guest for this morning?
Yes.
Toni Rae.
Maybe. Yeah, this is Toni.
Yes, Toni. How are you?
Good. How are you?
We're good. We're good. Where are you calling us from today?
New York City.
Oh, New
Big
York
Apple.
City. Wow. That's pretty cool. So you guys are under snow, I understand, right?
Oh, my goodness, yes. I just walked through 20-degree weather about a half mile.
Oh, my gosh.
In high heels, dodging snow. Yeah.
In high heels?
You go, girl.
You should know better than that. You live there, you know. How can you walk in heels in the snow?
Well, you still gotta look nice, right?
Yeah, I guess. This reminds me like a sketch that Billy Crystal used to do a long time ago. He'd go, I'd rather look good than feel good. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. So, I agree.
Yeah, so there you go. That's a statement for the 21st century, you know. Yeah. So, Toni, I was just introducing you and relating this to Valentine's Day. You wrote a book on dating called I Dated This Guy Once. And it says it's part Sex in the City, part Eat, Pray, Love. And so tell us a little bit about this. Is this a novel or a memoir? Tell us a little bit about that.
It's a memoir. So it's a nonfiction memoir, and it's basically just about my life and living overseas and traveling and dating and men, you know,
yeah,
the usual.
Man. The way you said it sounded like, oh, I've had enough of those. Well,
So I started it when I was living in Korea, and that's kind of why it's part Eat, Pray, Love. And, you know, I started writing it when I was living overseas, didn't speak the language. Uh-huh. And then just started writing about all of my past and my relationships and kind of what you have to go through, I think, to find love.
Right. That's true. Now, what did you do in Korea? How did you wind up there?
Well, actually, I got laid off 3 times in about 3.5 years. But from the time I was 22 to 25, I got laid off 3 times.
Wow.
So, you know, I did the usual, what you're supposed to do, which is put yourself through college, take out student loans, get a good job. But that was right around the time that the recession was, you know, happening. So from 06 to 08, you know, it was pretty bad. And so after the consecutive layoffs, I said, the next job offer I get, I'm taking, no matter what it is. And so I ended up taking a teaching position in South Korea. Somebody found my, a recruiter actually found my resume online. I have no intentions of ever going to Korea, obviously.
Right.
And, I decided to take the job.
So that was like going there doing what? Did you hear?
Teaching.
Oh, teaching.
I taught English for a year.
Oh, I see. Okay. So you said, what the heck, you know, I'm getting a job. I don't care where it is. I'm going, right?
Exactly. Yes.
Right. No. What city did you live in?
I lived in a city called Sokcho. It's a small beach town right on the water. And it's a cute little town, but it's small. So, wow. I mean, I think there's 30,000 people total in the whole town. And it's 3 hours east of Seoul, though. So you can take a bus ride into the city, you know, on the weekend and stuff like that.
Right. Sounds good. So you were there for a year. And was that like a temporary job, or did you decide after a year I'm going to leave?
They offer you a 1-year contract, and then at the end of the year, they ask you to renew if they want you to stay, and they did. But, you know, I was really far from family and missed home and missed America, so I came back.
Yeah, I don't blame you, you know. Everybody, you know, if you want to know what the best place in the world to live is, just look where everybody is moving to, you know. And everybody's coming here, you know what I'm saying? Including us, Charlotte.
Yeah. You know?
We both came from somewhere else. So this is cool. So tell us a little bit about the book. What can people expect from the book? I know it's your memoirs and stuff, but how did you approach this?
Well, so it's not a book on just dating, and it's not a book on just, you know, love or just basically my life. It's basically everything that you go through of the years, ages 18 through 26, and kind of how you approach your decisions. And basically, it's about, you know, as a society, how we're united and how we love each other or how we don't, you know, anymore. It's about, it's hard to explain because I have love letters in there to my future love, and I have email strings with ex-boyfriends, and I have, you know, the story of, I had a puppy one time, and my house got broken into, and something happened to my puppy. It's like, I mean, you might cry, you'll probably laugh. I'm pretty sarcastic throughout the book, so once you catch on to my humor, a lot of people say they laugh through it, but it's really just everything that you go through as a young woman that nobody prepares you for, I think is probably the best way to describe it.
Right.
And so, yeah, you know, most women will cry a little bit, laugh a little bit. And the biggest message from it is just kind of that we all need to love each other and stop being so afraid of it and stop bottling everything up and being afraid to give and put yourself out there.
Yeah, because I guess when you become vulnerable like that, it's pretty scary stuff, you know, when you get into a relationship and you don't know which way it's going to go. So you put love letters in there too? I mean, revealing everything, huh?
Yeah. So, you know, I kind of was still looking for my future love and didn't know which direction to go. And I kept moving around. I mean, I lived in L.A. and North Dakota and Chicago and Korea. And I just been moving around all over the world in the U.S. just kind of in search for something. And I think a lot of young people feel that, or they feel trapped, you know, they feel the opposite. And so for me, I was just always looking, and not necessarily for a guy, but just for something, you know, because as a young person, when you enter into society and you get laid off, or you have your MBA or your JD and you can't get a job, it's just extremely discouraging.
Right.
And I think that no focus in our society has been on that. And that really has also affected dating and relationships, because you have these young men who can't get a job and might even have their law degree, and they're bartending in New York.
Wow.
they're literally barely making it, and you meet them every day. And so I think that there's, you know, there's a lack of understanding and compassion for all of those kids. And I think I'm one of them, you know, the Generation Y or Generation X group who didn't sign up for that necessarily. You know, we thought that we were going into this great society and we got educated and we did all the things we told we should do. And, you know, a lot of us are pretty disappointed with the outcome.
That's true, yeah. Because relationships are not simple, you know, and I think, you know, and it's hard to commit and stuff, because what happens is, you know, the way I see things is like, you know, your entire life you're attracted to, let's say if you're straight, to the opposite sex, right? And then suddenly you get married or something, you settle down, and you're supposed to stop being attracted to these other people you've always been attracted to. So I think there's always that pull on relationships. And, you know, so it does require, I think, some dedication to keep yourselves together. So, So after Korea, when did you come back from Korea?
I came back from Korea at the end of 2009, and I actually moved back home to my hometown of Kansas City, but just for a little bit.
Oh, okay. And since then, have you found romance here in the States?
Yeah, actually I did. So I wrote the book back in 2008 to 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And I've fallen in love a few times, probably too many. But definitely found love in New York about a year ago. So
wow.
I'm extremely happy now, but you know, it took me 30 years.
Wow. Well, it does take a while, you know. So yeah, so this is serious, right? How long have you guys been together?
Just a year. Just
okay.
A year and a couple weeks, which is like 100 years for me.
Yeah. So you're saying that you seldom were in long-term relationships? You never would stay long?
You know, long-term relationships are just for some people. Some people really like that comfort of being with the same person for a really long time.
Right.
And for me, I always just kind of got bored after 3 to 6 months. You know, I said this was a lot of fun. And then as soon as anything got serious or anybody started getting upset or arguing or hurt, it just seemed like it wasn't worth it. Like,
right. So you just bail.
Why do people do this to each other, you know?
Yeah.
And then I think it takes a lot of growing up and a lot of, you know, just being really, you really have to look at yourself, you know, and say, what is it that's wrong with me that I'm not giving to these relationships that they're not working? So, you know, if you're the common denominator for all your relationships failing, you really have to look at yourself. And that's kind of what I ended up doing.
That's true,
And so, you know, realizing I was the common denominator and realizing that all these other people, you know, I have three sisters, I have parents that have been married for 38 years.
Wow.
And I'm thinking, how can they do this? And why are they doing this? Right?
Yeah.
So I started looking at myself and just started saying, you know, there's a lot of tough things that you have to go through if you want to be in a committed long-term relationship. And not everybody's wired to go through that.
That's true.
And,
and
some people are, you know. And then if you change your makeup and kind of adjust yourself enough, you might be able to.
And I think a lot of girls, I don't think they realize. I mean, if you really want to be loved by someone, you have to love yourself first. So many, I mean, people I know are just not happy with themselves and expect someone else to love them. And it's like, you have to love yourself first before you can expect someone else to love you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, completely. And I talk about that a lot in the book, because I also think that there's a lot of women in this world who are flipping through magazines or watching TV or whatever they're doing, and they're just judging themselves. Their self-esteem is so low. So they try and do things to make themselves feel better. And maybe they start sleeping around in high school, or maybe they start, there's so many different things, obviously, you can do as a young woman to try and increase your self-esteem. But what ends up happening is those are deep-rooted issues, and a lot of them are not dealt with. And just to your point of loving yourself, we as a society really need to start looking at people differently, meaning not judging a book by its cover and not thinking that you have to be uber skinny and you have to be uber beautiful and you have to wear a ton of makeup. I think that there's just things that, you know, just because of technology, that women are viewing themselves differently. And it's really unfortunate, because if there wasn't all this technology, nobody would know that you could be, you know, you could have a 25-inch waist. Nobody would know that, because it probably wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be comparing yourself to the women on TV, because you wouldn't be seeing it. So
I
totally agree. I think that, you know, and it starts with women when they're at a young age, because those things that are learned when they're younger are really what they carry with them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's cool. So we're talking to Toni Rae. The book is I Dated This Guy Once. And it's pretty cool. Now, do you have any plans for marriage with your current guy, or are you still dealing with I don't know if I want to be with him that long, right?
No, I definitely want to be with this one for a long time, but you know, I don't think the marriage thing is up to me, Sam.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's his job, right?
Right, exactly. That's not true, though. I mean, in today's world, you know, women make the proposition, too. Or at least let him know, you know. I mean, you know, tell him I'm not
going to... Well, let's just say you won't be seeing me get down on a knee or anything.
Okay. That's funny. So, Toni, do you have a website where people can find out more about the book, about you?
Yeah, you can go to idatedthisguyonce.com.
Uh-huh.
Or you can also, find it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Sounds good. Awesome. And so the book is definitely recommended for young women, I guess. And I guess a little... You know, I mean, it would hurt for all the women to read this too, who are in the dating scene again, and to find out what's going on, you know, and
I agree.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of fear of commitment, because it's sort of like, I don't know, in a way, it depends on how you look at it, but sometimes it's like you're just being. Like you devote your entire life to one person, you know, and to me, it's hard to wrap my mind around that, you know. I mean, I've been married twice and stuff, but you know, I'm like, you know, I don't know that I want to stay with someone for the rest of my life, you know. I mean, it would be cool when you get older to have a partner and a spouse and stuff. I don't doubt that, but you can do that later on in life, you know. You don't have to, you know. But at the same time, I envy people that do enjoy being with each other for that long, you know. And that's amazing. Like my parents, you know, they've been together for, 55 years or something, you know. So, I mean, that's a long time. That's a friggin' long time
really
to be
long.
Together with someone, you know.
It's very long.
I can't imagine 50 months, let alone 50 years. But well, Toni, you're a lot of fun. Thank you so much. Everybody go to idatedthisguyonce.com. Find out more about the book and about Toni. And this is cool. So did you always like to write? I mean, did this come naturally to you?
Yeah, I've always wanted to write. In fact, once my book got published, my dad gave me some stuff from when I was younger, and I wrote my first book when I was 8 years old. It was called Candy and the Weird Elephant.
Wow.
And so it's like a really stupid kid's book, right? But so I ended up finding all these books I wrote even when I was really young. This is something I would do. And so I've written my whole life. I've always had a journal and a diary, And my book's written much like a journal or a diary. So I think a lot of people kind of relate to me. I mean, you learn a lot about me pretty quickly, right? But you relate to me because I'm kind of just putting it all out there and telling you how I feel.
Right.
So yeah, I've always wanted to write. My main passion is, though, is to hopefully share my story and to maybe help other young women, because I know that there's a lot of stuff. I grew up in a family of four girls, and there's still a lot of stuff that just nobody talked about. My mom didn't tell me about. My sisters never told me about. And right. So there's a lot of stuff that women, especially, you know, through their teenage years, kind of go through and find out on their own. And maybe that's because parents are too embarrassed to bring it up, or maybe there's just, you know, maybe there's no parents around.
Yeah.
There's lots of, you know, extenuating circumstances. But for me, I'm just hoping that, you know, I think to save one soul is to save the world. So maybe if I can help one girl, then I've at least accomplished something.
There you go. Definitely. Definitely. Okay. Well, Toni Rae, thank you so much. You're definitely a lot of fun. Thank you so much for calling us.
Thank you.
Of course. And I'm definitely going to try and finish the book, because it's, you know, I'm not a girl or anything, but I like stuff like this, you know?
Awesome. Thank you so much, Sam. I really appreciate it, you guys.
Of course, Toni. All the best to you. Thank you.
All right. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow. So, yeah. So that's, you know, I mean, that's interesting because, you know, the commitment, you know, the vulnerability that is involved in relationships, not everybody can handle that, you know.
No, and definitely, I mean, these days the divorce rate is so high.
It really is, you know.
It's like, I just don't even want to be in a relationship because I don't want to get divorced.
Right, exactly. And let me tell you, man, it's not an easy way out. I'm here to tell you. Excuse me. But I can tell that, you know, I mean, I got divorced. My kids were young. And I can tell to this day that they would have turned out differently if they lived in the same home with me, you know. So I mean, I love my kids to death and everything, but I would have done some things differently in raising them. So divorce is not a cool thing, and it's not like people use abortion for contraception type of a thing, you know. And you know, don't you know you get, I mean, divorce is not the easy way out, you know. I mean, it's not going to solve your problems. So think about it really hard before you do. And when you do, stay in touch with your kids. You know, I've always been involved in their lives and everything. So I'm grateful for that. And but still, you know, I mean, I would have done some things differently with them. And so that's the result of divorce. What are you going to do? You know, you can't.
My parents are divorced also.
Are they really?
Yeah.
So you know what it's about, right?
Yeah.
Now, did you say you had a sister?
No.
No, so you're an only child, right? No. Yeah. I don't know why I thought a sister, but so you're an only child. I mean, that's mm-hmm. cool, right? So you got a lot of attention and stuff. And
yeah.
Did your parents push you to become like a really good swimmer, or is that
not
something?
At all.
So that came from you.
Yeah, I met a really good friend, and I just kept wanting to go to practice at 5 o'clock in the morning. No
Whoa.
Idea why, but I did. And then I don't know. And then I think when you start getting good at something, you want to just, I thrived off that and
right.
just wanted to keep going and going and see how good I could be. And
right.
I'm very competitive. So
really? Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Good for you. So have you won some medals and things like that? I mean, do they give out medals in competitions?
Yeah,
not
yeah.
just the Olympics, right?
No. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm in America, at Florida State, my record just got broken. Both of my records just got broken. But I was record holder there for the 500 and the mile.
Wow.
I won medals at the ACC championship. I competed at the NCAAs. So, yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. So, great. Well, I there's a couple things I wanted to bring up. You know, I mean, the weekend and stuff. I went to Vegas last week because I took some time off and stuff. So I drove down there. And, you know, I got to tell you, when you drive down there, like I was talking to someone the other day and I thought, you know, I'd rather drive than fly, you know. Because with flights, there's just so many uncertainties, you know, delays, cancellations, you know, all kinds of things like that. And when you drive, it's pretty much in your own hands. You know, you're going to get there on time, right?
And it's a pretty drive.
Right, it is. It's not bad, you know. Mm-hmm. And I've driven it, God knows, so many times, you know. Because I used to live in Vegas, too. And in fact, we got divorced when we lived there. So she moved back here with the kids. And I would drive here about every weekend to see them, you know. So it was crazy. And because it's about 300 miles each way, you know. It's not close. It's about a four-hour drive. I used to do it in three.
Wow.
Yeah, in 3 hours. because you know, you do it every week, you just don't have the patience, you know. So.
And especially there's such straight roads, it's like foot down.
Right, exactly. Except there's always traffic. So I figured it out. And I thought, you know, if I go during the wee hours of the night, I'm going to be able to go fast without traffic interfering. Because that's the thing. If you're going to go faster than the traffic, you stand out like a sore thumb, you know? And they see you right away. So you don't want to do that, you know?
Being strategic about this.
I know. And exactly. I mean, I had enough time to think about it, you know, 4 hours each way. So I realized, you know, some of the things about the driving. Like, for example, I concluded that if I drive like 100, 110, then I'll never get caught because the cops don't drive that fast. So they would never catch up from behind. And as far as ahead of me, like during the night in the middle of the desert, there's no cops with like speed guns or anything, you know, with radars. So I would... So the only way I could see a cop in the front is if I approach them, you know. They're like driving 80. I'm like suddenly 110. They see the lights coming from behind them. But that's still, you know, as soon as I saw them, I could slow down. And there's nothing they can do. They can't prove how fast I was going if I'm coming behind them.
Behind them.
And for how long or whatever. So I figured that's the secret, you know, just to drive when there's nobody else around, drive as fast as you can, and get the hell home, you know.
I'm a baby when it comes to driving. I'm like the 60-mile-an-hour grandma really? That everyone's honking at, like, move out of the way.
But that's good. You'll probably live longer that way.
I'm not a very good driver, so
really?
I'm like, oh.
What's not a good driver? What does that mean?
Oh, I don't know. I just don't think I'm a very good... Well, I've driven into a few people before.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Into cars, right?
Yeah. And
okay.
Like driven into the back of other cars. Yeah, not people.
Yeah.
Cars.
Oh, my God.
Thankfully, not people.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I've rear-ended a few people.
but that's probably because you weren't paying attention, right? I mean, it's not for being a bad driver.
See, not really. I was paying attention. I mean, the last person I drove into, it was on the 101 freeway, and I just don't even know what happened.
Really?
And I was paying attention. Both hands were on the wheel.
Right.
And I just drove into the back of somebody. I was like, wow, Charlotte, that's not okay.
But you know what? That's the thing, though, is that it has a name. I forgot what it is. When you start becoming like, when you doze off on the freeway because the traffic is like just so monotonous. You know, you're barely moving and stuff, and it's just, you're tired after a day's work. And you want to get home and, you know, there's no action. So you can tune out. And
especially LA traffic. I mean, I remember this day, the traffic was, one minute you were going 70, the next minute you're going 20.
Right.
And it's so back and forth.
Right.
And I think, I don't even know.
That's true. So you have to be on your toes
really
at all
on the
times.
Ball. Yeah.
Yeah, you really do. And so that was the drive. And now, so I'm coming back. So the drive there was fine. The drive back was fine. But then, you know, on the way, I see, they put up a sign saying there's an accident, you know, coming up ahead. So so our traffic, of course, slowed down a little bit coming back here. But the traffic going there, right, on the day I returned, there was an accident. Blocked two lanes going to Vegas.
Oh, gosh.
And as I was driving back to L.A., I'm seeing like a mile and mile and miles of cars just sitting there.
Oh, that's the worst.
Can you imagine? I mean, you know, you don't know what's going on ahead. You don't know how far and how long it's going to take before you start driving again. You're dying to get to Vegas, you know. And that's the whole point I was making about driving versus flying. And then so you can see even with driving, you don't know if you're going to get there on time.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. So you never know, you know. And the thing is, so I felt extremely fortunate because if this happened on my in my direction where I was going, oh man, I don't know what I would have done, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just so impatient and antsy all the time. It would just like depress the hell out of me, you know? My God,
ADD.
What do these people do? Yeah, you know? So that was good. And so, you know, I used to live in Vegas. I lived there twice, once in the 70s and then in the 90s. And so I've seen it grow and really grow. I mean, there's a lot of people there now, and it's really crowded, and the traffic is not fun in Vegas, you know. I don't know why it is, but their engineers there, their traffic engineers figured that it's better to make the traffic lights like very long, you know. I don't know how they figured that out, but it doesn't work for me, you know.
I went to Vegas in January. For another company I work for. I was at CES, the technology convention.
Right.
And then I went when I was 10 years old, which
really?
Doesn't really count.
Yeah.
So, but when I went for CES, I wasn't driving. So
right.
I have no idea. My idea of Vegas, I just see
cool.
all the pretty lights. And,
exactly.
Yeah.
That's the way to go, you know.
Yeah.
Don't drive, for crying out loud, you know. Yeah. What hotel did you stay in?
Encore.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
that's nice. That's
great.
The suites. Tower of the Wind Hotel.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, it was awesome.
I know, I stayed there too. So, but check this out. This time when I went, last few times I've been in Vegas, it's all, you know, the strip hotels are pretty much the same, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you can't open the windows or anything. And that gets me like stressed out, you know. I need to have at least a window. And
but when people are drunk, like coming home after, this is what you do in Vegas, you drink, coming home, the last thing you need is an open window when you're 70 stories up.
Yeah, I know, that's true, but at least let me crack the window or something, you know? I just get claustrophobic when I can't, like, you know, that's why preferably a balcony too. But the problem is on the strip, they don't have any balcony
mm-hmm.
hotels. And I did a search on balconies, right? Balcony hotels in Vegas. And so there's one called the Platinum, which seems really cool. It's not a casino, you know, because now the trend in Vegas is to build hotels without casinos for people that don't care for the casinos, you know. Because one thing about the casinos, they're very smoky, you know. I mean, they
yeah.
always smell like cigarettes. And, you know, I'm a smoker, but I don't smoke indoors. So I hate the smell too, you know.
Yeah.
And I wonder how can people that are not smokers, I mean, I can't stand it. How can people that are like so anti-tobacco can stand being here?
Yeah.
So I can understand why some people want to stay at hotels without casinos and, you know, business people, things like that. So that hotel was all booked because it was Valentine's Day, you know. So all the hotels were like charging an arm and a leg because
wow.
people were going
only
to
imagine.
Vegas. Yeah. So I finally read up on the Palms, that the Palms have has balconies. So I booked up there. I look at the pictures, and sure enough, it looks like a balcony and stuff, you know, because you can see from the room, from inside the room, it's like a whole like picture window, whatever. So I said, great. So I book a room. I get there, and I asked her. I said, "Oh, so all your rooms have balconies, right?" She says, "No, we don't have any balconies at all." I said, "What?" I said, what is this? You know, that's why I booked the hotel. So I said, I thought you did. I saw in the pictures. She says, no, it's like, you know. So then she says, well, we have balconies at the Palms Place, which is like next door. You walk like a few minutes through the casino and through like this walkway, and you get to Palms Place. And that one does not have a casino. So... But you can go to the okay. casino, the Palms, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I took that. I have to upgrade and pay more money. And I said, what the hell, you know, I don't care. It's just beautiful weather outside.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be in the room for a while. I don't want to just be cooped in, you know, the
mm-hmm.
room. And so I paid extra and stuff. And I go over there and I open the door. And, like, I could not believe this. Like a one-bedroom suite. Like you've never seen in your life, you know. I mean, all like picture windows, floor to ceiling windows. You can
wow.
see all of the city. You know, I was like on the 15th floor. huge balcony, patio. So it was just amazing, you know. I never stayed in a room like that because I never really needed one like that, and I still didn't. I mean, it's a great suite for partying and everything, you know. You bring 10, 20 people in there, you'd have a blast. But but it was like designed nicely, you know. They put a bathtub right in the middle of the bedroom. Have you ever seen anything like that? I'm like, what's the point, you know? But I guess just for the design part of it, I don't know, just to be different, right?
Yeah. When I stayed at the Encore, I was like, whoa. I've never seen, it was like The Hangover, the movie. I was like, whoa, this is insane. You pressed a button and the curtains opened. I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. I loved it.
I know. So that's one thing about Vegas is the hotels are relatively cheap for what you're getting, you know, because they make most of the money from the casinos, so they don't charge you a lot. But for a comparable hotel that you pay $200 a night in Vegas, you pay probably $600-700 somewhere else. Because these are nice five-star hotels in Vegas, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's that. And then, so I started telling you I lived in Vegas before and stuff, and I never gambled, you know. It never appealed to me or anything, and it still doesn't. And that's why I won't sit at any of the tables and play, because I know I'm going to lose, and I'm going to lose big, right? So I figured, what the hell, I'll just try my luck on the video poker machines. So because I didn't have anything to do for a while, I thought, what the hell, I'll sit at the quarter machine. But I can't play slot machines because there's nothing to do. It's bullshit, you know?
I love them.
No, I know, but you press the button and the thing just turns, you know? Yeah. You're not really, there's no input from you. I figured in poker there's some input. There's some thinking about it, right? So I sat with that and spent probably 2 hours on $10 that I put in, which was pretty good, you know. I mean, they can clean you out pretty quickly. So, but as I'm sitting there and stuff, you know, I mean, this was the first time I actually played video poker, and I always say that playing with machines is hopeless because they can figure everything out. You know, everything is pre-programmed and stuff. It's not like if you sit at the table. The casino usually wins anyway, but at least you see all the cards. You see what's going on. You have an equal chance with everybody. With a machine, you don't have an equal chance with the machine, you know? I mean, I realized after a while it figured out how I was betting, and it was kicking my ass, you know? So they give you some, they take some, they lose, you know, you win some, you lose some. Eventually, you're always going to put all your money in there, you know, because you're not going to leave until you finish everything.
And the people that win big are the ones that then gamble it away the next day because they're going to win again.
Right, you know. So obviously, I'm not playing to win when I'm just sitting there wasting time with $10-$20. But what's nice is you get free drinks. So even if you give, you know, and I give them $5 tip for a drink or something, and they're always grateful and stuff. Because maybe people who get free drinks figure I don't have to tip for that. Mm-hmm. So, but I mean, for $5, you get a $15 drink, you know.
That's
and what
great.
The hell? Yeah, and you can get as many as you want, you know. So so I figured that out, and I'm like sitting there really irritated with the machine. And then I thought, why are you irritated? You knew this all along, right? I mean, you can tell it's never going to let you win big, you know. I mean, it comes pretty close.
Always but, smarter than you.
Yeah. You know, the most was like I got 20 coins, which is, $5 or something, you know. One, but usually it's like, you know, 1, 2, 3 coins, you know, whatever. So it's pretty boring, but it was fun. So I just viewed it as a video game, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, we are all out of time, man. I can't believe how much we've been talking this morning, you know.
Talking away.
Yeah, sometimes I sort of like have to pull by the teeth to end the hour, but today there's still so much to talk about. But definitely out of time. So Charlotte, thank you so much for joining.
Thank you.
You're definitely a lot of fun. I think we made the right decision with you. And you're very pleasant to sit with, and that's very important, you know. It's not hard, it's not easy to find people that there's chemistry in the air, you know. But we have some great shows coming up. So thanks again, everybody. Join us, and we'll be back tomorrow.
Been listening
to Sam in the Morning, which airs every weekday from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. To get in contact with the show, please send email to info@latalkradio.com. Sam in the Morning is a production of LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.